Despite the pleas from her mother and Hunt, Bryce refuses to see a meta witch about the pain in her leg. Her investigation leads her to a new hidden truth that Danica was somehow involved in Synth and kept the information from Bryce. The pain of this realization does not make the day of Danica's birthday any better, nor does the cruel joke Amelie plays on Bryce. While Hunt reacts poorly to this, Bryce uses it as motivation to take care of her wound and assist in the creation of a synth antidote. Hunt is faced with the consequences of his actions, and while Bryce tends to his wounded body, she also uncovers a more deadly truth about synth that puts everyone she knows in more danger than ever before.
The views expressed by the hosts are entirely their own and in no way represent the thoughts or intentions of the original author.
This podcast is a discussion shared to spark thought and conversation on the characters and themes of this novel.
The interpretations presented in this podcast are just a few of the many possibilities. Listeners are encouraged to read along and share their own analysis of the text.
Though the hosts speak mostly within the constraints of this book, series and extended universe spoilers may be discussed with or without warning.
Explicit language, as well as themes of sex, violence, abuse, depression, self-harm, and death will recur throughout this podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
This is part one of this week's episode. Stick around for part two, which releases on Thursday.
Welcome to Book Talk for Book Talk, a podcast where we deep dive into the writings of your favorite novels.
This season, we are exploring Sarah J. Maas's first installment in the Crescent City series.
This is Jack.
And I'm Amy.
This week, we're discussing chapters 57 through 64 in A House of Earth and Blood.
The question we ask ourselves this week is, does SJM do the work necessary for us to believe the plot twist that we know will be coming with Hunt's betrayal?
The theme we're going to see this episode is mirroring one another. Ooh. And before we dive into this, heads up, gentle reader. I've been listening to Bridgerton. Been back in a country for 24 hours from Chile. My jet lag is jet lagging hard. Also PMSing because I started crying on the way over here to the author having a note saying that this character does not have a bee allergy. So let's continue.
Wow.
Yeah, it's not looking hot. Thank God nothing big happens in this because I would be crying in this episode. Yeah. So we start off chapter 57 right after Bryce and Hunt's video call with her parents, where Hunt basically just stabbed her in the back and was like, yo, her leg hurts. And we're going to get more backstory from Bryce and her mom, but she does hint a little bit about Ember here. Quote, I've never seen my mom back down from a fight. It rubbed off, I guess. I can't wait for us to talk more about Ember, but I think that this is the beginning of showing that maternal strength. There's never been a doubt of maternal strength, but we just never discussed it yet. Yeah. I don't think it's something that Bryce has discussed, and it's something that's going to be cherished. It's protectiveness, but in a approved way.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not alpha hole-ish is what you're saying.
Yeah. Things are safer with a vagina.
Okay. Now, I want to suggest, as we explore Bryce's injury throughout this episode, Bryce has mistakenly connected her injury and the pain that she feels from that injury to the preservation of the memory of her friends. These two events, they're connected by time and trauma. Bryce received both physical and mental scars at the time of this injury, and the physical becomes a metaphor for the mental. And we're going to see that play out throughout this episode as well. And we've talked about it before. Bryce has survivor's guilt.
Mm-hmm. And later on, Bryce and Hunt are going to say that they mirror one another. And we're kind of seeing that now. This is before they even said it. And Bryce talks about not wanting to erase her friends. And she notes, quote, his hair skimmed his brow, the tattoo as he studied the scar. Now, that his tattoo being his representation of a scar, he's also struggling with the reminders of loss. They're mirroring one another. Mm-hmm. However, I think, and I'm going to note, and, you know, dare I say, maybe even prove that their mirroring is starting to shift a little bit, mm-hmm. especially since his betrayal's coming up.
Yeah.
And this appears like a mirroring, but it's not. Yeah. Because the difference is Bryce is choosing to have this scar and this pain Hunt has not. Hunt would get rid of that crown in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and I also think they don't mirror each other for a different reason.
Oh.
Hunt's tattoo is the result of his actions, whereas Bryce's scar is a result of other people's actions.
Yep, absolutely. So this is just, it's funny, like we're about to be built up to like, we're a mirror. And it's like, starting to lose that reflection.
Right.
In a sweet moment, Hunt offers friendship to Bryce. So he's kind of like offering slash like, will you be my friend? Yes, let me bone you later. And these descriptions are really sweet. Like the words that SJM uses are vulnerability and tentative hope. And Hunt is putting more of himself out there because he's never had a real friend other than Isaiah, that even then it's a little questionable if they're friends.
Yeah.
It's so important for Hunt that Bryce is a friend, because Shahar was not a friend.
Yeah.
And at this point, he can't, even though they're like in a situationship that's leading to relationship, he needs some kind of stability with her. And if he can get friendship, then he will.
Yeah. And I think what's important here also, and again, mirroring, but also not mirroring, throughout this episode, we're going to see Bryce go through the process of kind of cleansing herself of Danica, or her expectations of her relationship with Danica, and replacing that with Hunt, just as Hunt is going to replace Shahar with Bryce. And so they're going to get things from each other that they were never able to get from Danica or Shahar. And we're going to see that in this episode, too. So hard left, as Bryce tells the backstory of her mother and Randall meeting, I was reminded that Ember is obsessed with the image of the embrace.
Yeah.
And I finally figured out why. So the embrace is soulless as the sun nestled between two mountains, which are Kathona's breasts. And Ember was taken in by Kathona priestesses, and Randall was going to be a soulless priest. So Kathona, soulless, Ember, Randall, the embrace.
It's so sweet.
It's sweet, but I also was just like, oh, SJM, so many layers. She never takes the time to explain it to us.
No.
But if you sit there and look at it, you see the layers of what she's doing, and it's just chef's kiss.
And also, like, I feel like we're starting to get a little bit of saviorness here. It's almost saying that, like, Bryce is a deity, again, going into the Luna of it all. I don't think Luna is a child of Solas and Kathona.
No.
But still saying that Bryce is a deity almost, because, or at least going to literally be the savior of everyone.
Yeah.
Because if her mother and her adoptive father are vessels for gods, and Bryce grew up in a temple for 3 years, a fact that we never really talk about.
Yeah, yeah, it's true.
It's like, your formative, like, or not formative, but like your early baby years.
We're in a temple.
In a temple, but we're not, let's just breeze skip past over that.
Yeah. I will say, I forgot to add this. It's significant that Randall is soulless because if you think about it, the Autumn King worships Luna, the moon, and which is different from soulless, right?
Yep.
So for Ember to go from the moon to the sun is also significant.
It's sweet.
It's sweet.
Bryce says of her mother, quote, "They expected to find a helpless, hysterical female. What they found was a legendary sharpshooter and a mother who would move the earth itself to keep her daughter." Motherhood, again, the protectiveness is celebrated here. It's respected. It's the ultimate feminine as a weapon, you know? And again, you don't have to be a mother to feel that protectiveness.
Yeah.
But I think there's a sense of ferocity, and we kind of laugh at Ember a little bit of like, you're so overprotective. And we all know moms that are like that of like, look out, honey, be careful. And we tend to dismiss it as a society and as a joke in media.
Yeah.
But that protectiveness is a mother willing to save their child at all costs.
Right. And as adults, people are capable of looking back and appreciating that.
Yeah.
And or if they didn't have a mother like that, they're capable of looking back and resenting it because they feel like their mother didn't care.
It's the difference between Pharah and Bryce.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, this conversation is happening while Bryce and Hunt are hanging out on Bryce's bed. And, you know, you can sense that there's sexual tension and he stretches. And I want to point out that we know this already. They're attracted to each other. But I have to remind us of the stark difference of the now versus Bryce in chapter 8. Everything was a threat. Every Vanir male was a threat. She was always looking for the possible exits and how to protect herself. And so for her to observe Hunt's muscles and see them with desire rather than threat mm-hmm. is an important transition that I just want to point out. Quote, Hunt smiled slowly as if he knew precisely why she'd swallowed, but lay back on the pillows, his wings sprawled beneath him, a predator content to wait for his prey to come to him. This use of prey and predator and the observation of muscles is no longer about safety or danger or about Hunt being a threat.
Yeah. There's a note that I didn't note later, but I'll note now. And there's a point where Bryce is telling Hunt, like, none of the human boys were interested in me. And Hunt says, I'm surprised none of the human boys would be interested. And she notes, like, well, I guess, like, he says it a little differently, but I guess he's not a human boy either. But she doesn't dismiss it as, like, you're a gross veneer.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing here.
Right.
Where she's not dismissing it as, like, these evil muscles, now they're sexy muscles.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Pin me down with them.
They were there the whole time, Bryce.
Yeah, but that's, it's just a good writing technique
yes.
that we can see the same things differently depending mm-hmm. on context.
Yep.
We then move into chapter 58, and Ember texts Bryce the location and time of her Meadowitch appointment that she told Bryce she was going to make. And Bryce, we find, well, we already know that she doesn't want to go to this appointment. And she starts to use silence and avoidance as a tool to avoid this treatment because she's not ready to give up Danica yet. Or again, the mm-hmm. physical and the mental are being reflected in each other. Bryce not only ignores her mother's text about the appointment and doesn't respond, she also thinks when Hunt calls her out for missing the appointment and instead going to the meat market, quote, she should never have mentioned it. So I am surprised that she even mentioned it to Hunt. But now that he's brought it up and is using it against her, she's going to use avoidance and silence.
I can't with her behavior in this.
Yeah. And it's what we're seeing from my perspective is she's resorting back to that vapid, bratty behavior, not because that's how she feels, but it's a facade mm-hmm. to deflect their attention.
Yeah. It's definitely like and I feel like Hunt has the same attitude. Aren't we over this?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming back to seeing a break in behavior in mirroring, while Hunt wants to be a partner to Bryce and be like, he's like, yo, let me talk to you. Let me challenge you. Like, Randall does this with your mom. What do you want in a husband, mate, partner? And it's just like, my heart would be fluttering. My heart was fluttering. And Bryce is still struggling with her mom's trauma. And it's like all very fair and valid because, mm-hmm. again, she spent her early years hiding from her abusive father, biological father. Hunt makes it very clear that he wouldn't stay away from her and that he puts himself into the partner category. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this entire chapter is just like, mates.
Yeah.
Like this entire book has been, they're mates. Yeah. This section is like, he mentions boyfriend, mate, husband. I'm like, God, slow down, buddy. Yeah,
seriously.
And Bryce really struggles with that concept, but you know, she'll get there. Hunt gives Bryce white opal, which represents joy. There's a bunch of different colors for the opals, each meaning something differently. But opals in general, other than being October's birthday stone, shout out to my fellow October babies, they mean hope, purity, and trust. Hunt buys the opal one for joy, right? And this is all a sweet moment. However, as someone who has who've had many an opal, because again, birthstone, also are like super pretty, but they're actually one of the weaker gems. Mm-hmm. They're known for being brittle. They mm-hmm. are known for breaking and they're known for scratching. They're actually highly discouraged as being an engagement ring mm-hmm. because you wear it all the time, it'll break. And I felt like that was such a perfect stone for SJM to have chosen for this because she could have done marble. She could have done a lot of other things, just a rock. But she chose opal because this opal, this thing is like, the stone is like a bit of trust between the two. It's mm-hmm. a bridge. Like it's a more fundamental, like actual physical thing of their connection.
Yeah.
And it is brittle and it is breakable.
Yeah.
And brittle means breakable.
Brittle does mean breakable.
Jet lag.
Which is so brilliant given the circumstances and what's going to happen by next episode. Like, ugh, Ask Jim, why are you so smart? Yeah. What I love in this moment is that Hunt acts on impulse. He wants to give Bryce the stone, and he does. And then he's like, shit. Like, what did I just do?
The first time I read it, I thought he put a tracking device in there.
Oh.
And you know what? The second time I read it, you I thought the same that? Thing. And this last time that I read it, I was like, but are we sure there's not a tracking device?
No tracking device.
No, he's just being sweet.
He's just being sweet. However, he is beating himself up because his only frame of reference for ever gifting a woman something is Shahar. And Shahar was so wealthy, she had an ocean's worth of jewelry, and therefore, this type of gift wasn't like, oh, it's a nice gesture, but doesn't really mean anything. And so, A, it shows the imbalance between Shahar and Hunt significantly, but also shows Hunt's insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
That he trusts Bryce in a lot of ways, but he's not necessarily ready to trust her with his heart.
Yeah, yeah. I'm such a sentimental, like, sap that I would work so well for Hunt. Like, Hunt could be like, here's a rock. And I'd be like, I will cherish this rock forever.
Do you want my firstborn child?
I will. No.
I will name a child after this rock.
After this rock. In this situation, Hunt is pursuing me. I would hope to have his firstborn child.
What I mean, and what this is saying also is Hunt is always willing to be vulnerable first.
Yes.
Even yep. if he's not ready to give over his heart, he's still willing to try.
He got a taste of the vulnerability and cannot stop.
No, he cannot.
But now I'm wondering if he's being so vulnerable as almost like to make up for the fact that he's actually hiding so much from Bryce mm-hmm. is about to betray her.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point because we're going to see it by the end of the episode where the closer Bryce gets to the truth about Danica, the closer she gets to the things Hunt is hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And he uses intimacy he's as a distraction.
He's vulnerability gaslighting her.
He is vulnerable. Yeah.
That one hurt.
Makes me sad.
Yeah.
I don't think he's doing it with ill intent. I think he's so desperate able for both to work out.
Yeah,
Even though he knows that it can't.
Yeah, but the intent is to deceive her, and that is therefore ill.
Mm. So Bryce and Hunt move on in the meat market, and Bryce is at a loss for words when she's dealing with a teenage veneer who calls her out for being like, y'all are asking stupid, cheesy questions about synth. We all know what you're doing. Bryce becomes at a loss for words because someone, for once, has a leg up mm-hmm. over her, right?
Mm-hmm.
Bryce is being called out for her game. And I feel like in some ways, this is reflected at the end of the chapter when Bryce interacts with Therian. And not that it's because Therian wanted to get a leg up on Bryce, but I think she's going to just get knocked down peg after peg.
Yeah.
And she's not ready for it.
I feel like this is also showing Bryce being really distracted, because I feel like Bryce of earlier in this book would not do this. I think it's such a dumb move. Everyone knows who you are and right. knows the Umbra Mortis. Like, he's a cop, essentially.
Yeah.
And you're going around asking for drugs while he's right behind you.
And then he gives you an opal in broad daylight.
Right? Like, and everyone knows, like, again, like, you were here just a few weeks ago, like, searching things. Also, to me, it shows that she's making mistakes that are obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what allows Hunt to get away with what he does.
Absolutely. I agree. I think I never thought about it that way, but it makes sense. Because if Bryce was truly focused, she would pick up on all the clues I'm about to lay out for us in this episode.
Snapping my fingers in agreement.
So I spent as much time as I could in my notes pulling out all the breadcrumbs SJM leaves for us that lead up to Hunt's betrayal.
Yep.
And I'm going to do that throughout this episode for every chapter. In this chapter specifically, Bryce is investigating the synth, and the teenage veneer reveals that she should talk to the Myrrh. And Hunt is like, nope, can't let you find out about the synth. And so he says to her, quote, we should lay out the facts before we run to the Myrrh, accusing them of being drug dealers. He hadn't been able to stop her from sending a message via Otter to Therian 20 minutes ago, and sure as hell hadn't been able to stop her from heading for the river's edge to wait. And later on in that same page, he says, quote, the synth probably has nothing to do with this. And he even tries to stop Therion from talking when Therion is giving Bryce information about the synth. And it's just, I always thought it was because he was concerned for safety reasons, not because he was hiding something. But we're going to see a lot of messaging that's like this that makes it very, very clear.
Yeah.
He's trying to divert her.
He's like, no, let's not do it. Let's not do it.
It has nothing to do with the horn.
If he was really concerned, he, like, you know, Bryce would have been like, here, little otter, here's my message. And she turns away. And then when she's not looking, he could just electrocute it and kill it.
Yeah, it's true.
Just
violence against otters is not acceptable.
No, I agree. I agree. I'm not encouraging him. I'm just saying those were options.
It's true. The revelation that Danica is associated with synth and was on a synth boat right before her death comes to us at the end of chapter 8 and leads us into chapter 59. And we don't actually know whether Danica was buying or selling, but she was on a boat with synth before her death. And that's what's important here. And this is where I see the parallel to the meat market, where Bryce is struck dumb by information that someone else has. Bryce tells Therion and Hunt, quote, I don't get why she never mentioned it. Hunt responds, quote, maybe it wasn't worth mentioning. And again, I see this not as trying to placate Bryce, but as trying to divert her. Does he feel in his own heart his work with a synth is not worth mentioning right now? Maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's all like getting Bryce off the scent. I trust nothing from him right now.
I don't either, because once they go leave the meat market and go back to her apartment, he goes to the gym in her building.
No, I don't believe it.
I don't believe it either.
Yeah. And if she wasn't so busy trying to be sneaky too.
Right.
She would notice he's being sneaky.
Exactly.
But while he's at the quote unquote gym, don't believe it.
Don't believe it.
Bryce decides to call Fury. And it's super awkward, but the conversation dynamic, I feel like, is set up right away, because Fury doesn't let Bryce have a minute of frustration or anger or resentment. And pretty early on, she just says, quote, what's up, B? And Bryce thinks, as if that somehow erases nearly 2 years of silence. Fury's like, we're going to go back to normal and I'm going to treat you the way that I always treated you. Mm-hmm. And that's really important with what Bryce is about to find out.
Yeah, I think so too. And throughout this conversation, what happens is Bryce discovers that not only has Fury been keeping information from her, but Danica was also keeping more information from her.
Seriously.
But Fury knew. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, and Bryce talks about feeling jealous. Like, why did she pick Fury over me?
Yep.
It's no wonder to me then that Bryce is assertive with Fury on the phone over and over and over again. I mean, already within less than 10 pages, people keep withholding information from Bryce. She is feeling like the figuratively weak person because information is power.
Yep.
And Bryce thinks of Fury, quote, liar, fucking liar and coward. Like, I don't know how Fury ever expects to have a relationship with Bryce again.
Not like this.
Not like this. But at the same time, I would also suggest Bryce is taking out her own anger towards Danica on Fury.
Yes.
Because right now they are linked. They both
had
information and withheld it from Bryce.
Yep.
Fury tells Bryce at one point towards the end of the conversation, quote, Danica didn't want you even knowing something like that existed. Her goal was to protect you, always, even from yourself.
We start off this book, and Bryce talks about feeling like an other. She doesn't say it initially at first. You kind of get that sense early on, just the way that she describes her body versus her friend's body, her lack of powers, their powers. And then eventually she voices that she feels like they were never equal, unless they were partying. Then they were all equal. And you hear this moment, right, of Fury kind of being like, you know, we were doing this to protect you. You were taking all the drugs. I saw you take all the drugs. And Bryce is just saying, what the hell? You did them right along with me.
Right.
Her friends are othering her.
Yeah.
And Bryce cannot process the things as quickly as she does. That's fair. So where are you protecting her? Rather than lying to her,
right?
Where's the care? And I'll come back to this. If Bryce was so out of her mind, why didn't Fury or Juniper take Bryce back home?
Yep.
Fury, to me, this shows that they look down on her. Yep. Whether Fury and Danica and all of them would want to say that it's quote-unquote looking down, it is.
Right.
Whether this is what Danica felt or not, Fury is the keeper of Danica's secrets. Therefore, I think it's fair to say Danica felt the same way, what she's hinting at.
And the message that it sends is they are judging Bryce.
Yep.
The people with whom she felt safest.
Yep.
Quote unquote safest, judged her regularly and mm-hmm. often. Mm-hmm. And that has got to be so painful for Bryce. And it's only going to contribute to the decision she makes throughout this episode, because I think what she's going to start to see is that not everything was as pure mm-hmm. as she wanted it to be in her relationship yeah. with Danica.
Yep.
I have to point out one breadcrumb. After the conversation with Fury, Bryce calls Rune and he mentions to her, quote, "If you run into a Crystallos, ask it for some venom, would you?" Which is also a clue for what Bryce is going to decide to do later in this episode.
Yep.
During that same conversation with Rune, Rune talks about running into Danica. And what we've been seeing in this throughout this chapter is that violence and lies are an expression of love between those with whom Bryce does not have a healthy relationship.
Yep. Yep.
Think about Danica. Think about Fury. Quote, "Ran into is an understatement. She hadn't even made the drop, and she nearly kicked my balls across the lobby. Declan had to involve himself to stop it. It sounded like Danica, all right, even if everything else she'd learned lately didn't." And this is a theme we see in probably all of SJM's books, that we can't talk about our feelings, but we express our feelings through violence. And, you know, you didn't yeah. ask for this, but I'm going to go hit this person for you because they wronged you.
Also, what right does Danica have to not just do that, but to keep an apology away from her?
Yeah, unacceptable.
Because that's Rune. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Bryce could say, "I don't want anything to do with him. I don't want to hear it."
Right.
But that was an apology that Bryce never heard.
Right.
Because and Danica chose that.
Danica withheld it. Yep. Yep. Again, and that's where she's presenting her alpha hole nature. Mm-hmm. Bryce is not part of your pack. And even if she was, you don't get to make those choices.
Yep.
And I think that this is what makes Hunt and Bryce different in some ways to me from other characters we've seen in other SJM books. Their instinct is not like Danica's. It's not, let me go beat up this person for no reason. Because, you know, Rune just apologized.
Yeah.
He didn't threaten anybody. Instead, they would rather be vulnerable to one another. And yes, we're going to see Hunt be violent and threatening later mm-hmm. against Bryce's will. But it's not in reaction to someone apologizing to Bryce.
Yeah.
Just like violence, love is demonstrated through keeping secrets. We see that with Fury right now. We see that with Danica from the past.
And we even see that with Rune and Bryce. Like, he doesn't mention until now. Honestly, Rune's done nothing wrong at this point. He's my sweet baby angel.
I was going to say, Bryce wouldn't have listened to Rune anyway.
No, he's perfect. But he's not perfect, but he's my perfect boy. Not even. I'm PMSing. That's what I am. But, you know, kind of like honing in what you're saying, violence is love and lies are acceptable. Right. And it kind of has to be if these are the people you love.
Right, right. And it's unfortunate that we're going to see Hunt exhibit some of this. He doesn't normally try to, but because of the path that he's on right now, mm-hmm. we're going to see the same thing. He's going to be violent in Bryce's honor, and then he's going
to tell lies.
He's going to tell lies. He's going to have secrets revealed.
Yep. Now, going into chapter 60, I can't tell if SJM is trying to feed me this propaganda or if it's Bryce. I'm going to blame Bryce. But the propaganda being that Danica was good. Danica's username is Defendier, as in the first letter of her name and then her last name, which when you put it together sounds like Defender. And it's meant to be a reminder that Danica was the good guy, right? She's the defender. She's trying to protect people. Now, again, I maybe don't think this is like SJM trying to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely convinced SJM thinks that Danica's great.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that this is Bryce needing to remind herself that this is how she views her friend.
Exactly. I think that she's grasping at straws right now.
Yeah.
Because rocks keep getting thrown at her image of Danica, and that's beginning to really shatter.
Yep.
Since we're in a new chapter, let me give you some more hints that Hunt is scheming right now and trying to throw Bryce off the trail of Synth. Bryce keeps talking about Synth and what she wants to do next, and Hunt says, quote, "It's a stretch. We're better off doubling down with Dannon and looking for the horn, not chasing down this drug." When has Hunt ever outright chosen to collaborate with Rune? Right.
Yeah.
This would have been more believable if he'd been like, Rune isn't working hard enough, let's go bust his balls.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Instead of being like, let's go work with him.
We should really work with your brother. This is a great choice. Oh, he doesn't know. Never mind. Your cousin.
Your cousin. However, Hunt's tune changes as soon as he hears that there's a potential antidote to Synth via Hypaxia and the venom from a Crystallis demon. Why? Because Hunt wants access to it if he's about to use Synth.
Mm-hmm.
Bryce calls Hunt out for this sudden change in tune and all of a sudden not caring about the horn. Hunt explains it away by saying, quote, "We'll keep looking, but if this drug explodes, not just in this city, but across the territory of the world, that antidote is vital. How can we get our hands on some venom for her?" Like, okay, Hunt, not obvious at all. But Bryce is distracted by Danica, by the truths that are being revealed, that she doesn't pick up on this. Hunt is then conveniently bothered with texts about Legion stuff,
mm-hmm.
and his body language becomes suspicious. Quote, "He glanced at the screen and his wings shifted, tucking in slightly." I also want to point out that he leaves immediately, and Naomi is the one who comes to watch Bryce. And I'm starting to see a pattern, and I'm going to talk about it later, where it's always Naomi who comes, Hunt calls on to watch Bryce. And you know who we haven't heard from in a really long time? Justinian.
Suspicious. Hunt convinces Bryce not to act out, right? Because he's like, no, let's not do this. And then he rewards her with hints of sex.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, "Leaning down to whisper, his lips brushed over the curve of her ear. JJ would be proud of you. Her toes curled in her slippers and stayed that way long after he'd left." So he's like, he gets his way and praises her with sex. Mm-hmm. Also, remember in ACOTAR where everything was watery bowels?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is curled toes.
Yeah.
Even in the third book.
Yeah.
I just...
Also in Silver Flames.
Yeah. Oh my God. I think it speaks a lot about SJM as a person.
Yeah.
And she experiences.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lie. I don't think my toes particularly curl.
When you're turned on?
Yeah. I don't think so. Not to the point where... Also, I have this mental image every time I read this, and I hope that this happens to you, Amy, and to the listener. Every time that Bryce is turned on and says, "My toes curled," I think about the scene in The Wizard of Oz where it lands on the witch, the witch's sister, and the ruby slippers are removed, and then the toes curled in.
Thanks. Yes, I will have that image
for every time. I'm like, whoop. Hunt knows, though, how to use sex and the promise of sex to his advantage. And, you know, I don't know. Good for him. Bryce has been using that.
Yeah.
And now he gets to.
Yeah. And again, I think there are a lot of reasons why they don't have full-fledged sex in this novel.
Yeah.
But I think part of it is if they had, it would be ruined by all of this murkiness.
I agree. If they had had sex rather than just kind of hooking up.
Yeah.
I don't know if she would forgive him.
I don't think so either.
Yeah. So it starts off with Bryce and I in very similar situations. She starts her period.
Oh, the next day.
The next day, yes. Menstrual cycles have been discussed more in this book than in other SJM books.
Yeah.
And it's been used as a marker of time and in points of life. And we're getting this now. And I don't think I've ever really had another character I don't remember any other characters like actively having their period. Mm-hmm. They might have talked about it. They might have said, oh, that sucked, but yeah. Not like, hey, I'm mentioning this. And I think that that's because, like everything else in this book, where it's a marker in time, it's going to be a marker in time for everything to change for Bryce, because as if no other change was happening beforehand. But from here on out, a lot of things are going to really shift, and she's going to be making decisions on big points of her life and making those changes.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought this up, because I think we see in literature very little discussion of menstrual cycles, except in the past tense, mm-hmm. or around very specific events, like the first time you bleed, or yeah. going through menopause,
yep.
or you missed your menstrual cycle, you might be pregnant, right? Mm-hmm. It's never about like a run-of-the-mill, yeah, this happens. Like, this is what it is. This is my everyday life.
Yeah.
Because somehow menstrual cycles are shameful.
Yep.
And I think that's really important to think about as we enter this part of the chapter, because Bryce is going to feel a lot of shame today. And it is, to everybody else, another run-of-the-mill day.
Yes.
But to her, it's a really big day.
Really, yeah. I mean, it feels like a true friend. Like, I'm going to start my period on your birthday. It's also, like, one last note. You know, I'm like, hurrah, SJM, you're including periods in the book. We never really see that all the time. Good for you. Except it magically disappears 2 days later when he's fingering her.
Or he just doesn't care.
3 days later? Yeah, but there's no... It's on a white couch.
Yeah, it's true. Maybe she forgot.
You know.
She was so horny. She forgot so she was causing him pain.
I'm just saying. Like, there's nothing wrong with it. I understand. But, like, I feel like there's, like, a... Hey. Anyway, let's continue.
Throughout the day, Bryce retreats into the weapon she's accustomed to using to have power over people, and that's lying. And she's really normally good at it, but people can see right through her right now. She lies to Hunt about needing to go to meetings, and that's why she can't help him continue looking for the horn. She lies to La Haba about not wanting to be distracted by Hunt, when in reality she just wants to avoid him. Bryce needs everybody at arm's length, and lies are what she's using to draw those boundaries, when honestly, it would be healthier to just be like, hey, this is how I'm feeling today.
Yeah.
And this is the boundary I need to set. I think people would be way more understanding.
Oh, yeah. La Haba asks one of the most heartbreaking questions ever. Mm. And she's like, when she's talking about like why Jespa collects all of them, she says, quote, am I not a person too? And spoiler for book two, but it reminds me of like that the Asteri are collecting them. Mm-hmm. It is one of those moments where I'm like, why Jespa?
Yeah.
Why? I don't understand that. And especially with how things play out, I still don't understand it.
And it's a really good commentary just on slavery in general.
Yeah.
You know, makes you think about all the people in our past history mm-hmm. who were slaves, and they must have thought this too.
Yeah.
Which is really, really tragic.
It is.
After she's done with work for the day, Bryce goes to pick up chocolate croissants. And I want to point out that when Bryce does this and goes to the river to eat the chocolate croissants, we are in Hunt's point of view. And this is important because, A, it limits what we know about the croissants and their significance, which means that the reveal is more impactful to us as readers. B, it also influences the narrative. Quote, the setting sun gilded the mists veiling the bone quarter. This seems like before, when Hunt observed that the setting sun gilded like the puddles golden and all these other things, Hunt still has a somewhat positive point of view right now. And that's why we're seeing that the sun is gilding things. To gild something with gold seems like not something you would think about if you were depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important because that's a choice SJM is making as a writer. Hunt's mood is not soured, so he's still capable of seeing these things where Bryce's point of view should not include something like that.
Yeah. Bryce levels with Hunt by giving him the information that it is, in fact, Danica's birthday. And again, Hunt's love language is vulnerability. Mm-hmm. And that's what we're seeing right now, that she's like, you know, being like, okay, I've been a bitch to you all day, so let me tell you why. It's her way of apologizing without having to apologize.
Yeah. It's a great point. Bryce, during this conversation, specifically calls out what we've been saying for a while throughout this season and what Jack mentioned at the start of the episode, that Bryce and Hunt are mirrors. Now, to me, when I got to this point, I was reminded of several instances throughout this novel where, although SJM does a lot of work with breadcrumbs and world building and whatnot, the characters state a lot of things that normally are things we read between the lines or that are mm-hmm. the subtext, but instead she has the characters call them out for the reader.
Yeah.
And it hurts me because I don't want the characters to talk about it because I want to see it for myself.
Yeah.
So why would she make this choice?
Because SJM is saying that they're no longer mirrors.
Okay, so you're saying it's the opposite.
Yeah. I think that SJM is finally letting them say it and see it because it's no longer true.
Okay.
Because they were mirrors before, and now that we're finally like, whoa. So for the readers who may not have like picked it up on beforehand, mm-hmm. now they're like, whoa, you are mirrors. And then if you're paying close attention afterwards, you're like, wait, but you're actually not?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of big differences there. Because I don't think SJM would be so heavy-handed sometimes. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes she is. But I feel like it's a sign. And it's also meant to have Hunt's betrayal hurt more.
Yeah. So it's almost ironic.
Yes.
Yeah, that hurts even more. Thanks, SJM. So even though they may be headed in different directions, we've seen in the last few chapters that Bryce and Hunt have accepted each other not only as friends, but also emotional twins. And I acknowledge that whether or not it's true right now, they think it's true. And that's important when we think about what happens next. When Bryce opens the croissant box and sees Emily's message of trash on the croissants, Bryce gets upset. And I don't think it's because Hunt is attracted to Bryce that he's upset for her. Mm-hmm. I think he's upset because he's like, you just hurt my emotional twin. She's upset, therefore I'm upset.
Yeah.
It's not because he's like, I gotta protect her because I'm her man. And so when he goes off to be physically violent with Amelie and tell her to fuck off, I don't think he does it to defend Bryce's honor. I think he's there to make sure neither Bryce nor Hunt get hurt, because if Bryce is hurt, Hunt is hurt.
Yeah, it definitely feels a lot more personal to him. And that's not to say that he doesn't care about Bryce and he's doing it selfishly, but it means so much more to him. Mm-hmm. Also, he gets to lash out at the people who've always wronged him, but he can't do that.
Right.
Like,
right,
we
right,
know right. He wants to kill Micah.
Right.
But he can't do it. But mm-hmm. what he can do is choke this person.
Exactly. And I think he seizes the opportunity because Amelie took something special to Bryce and made it a weapon. Mm-hmm. Just like I'm sure Hunt has had happen to him many times. Something yep. that he viewed as special was taken advantage of by his captors or his masters and used as a weapon against him.
I just want to know, how was trash written in cursive?
I view it as like chocolate piped onto the croissants.
I view that as more chocolate.
Yeah, I do too. I would have been like, thank you.
Yeah, I'd just be like, you know what? And also, it's upsetting, but I also feel like Bryce, like, had Hunt given Bryce a minute. I know she was shaking. I know she was really upset. But wasn't that also Bryce and Danica dressed up as trash 1 year for yeah. their version of Halloween?
Yeah.
I think if he had just given Bryce a beat, she would have loved it. Okay, maybe not loved it, but I think she would have like leaned into it because it almost feels more fitting for right. this to be on her birthday, to be like, well, Danica, we're both trash still.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's fair. But Hunt wants to overreact and hurt someone because he's not had the opportunity
to do that for himself.
To do that for himself yeah. or Bryce. And what we see is a reflection of what Danica did to Rune, mm-hmm. right? Hunt goes and attacks Amelie, where Danica once attacked Rune. In some ways, it's the same. I have to acknowledge that Hunt does it for a new hurt, whereas Danica did it when Rune was apologizing for an old hurt. So to mm-hmm. me, it is different, but does it make it okay? I don't know.
I mean, those were wasted croissants. You know how I feel about food.
It's true.
Like,
and honestly, Hunt has been working really hard to get Bryce to eat. He shouldn't have taken those croissants.
I like feed her. Feed her the croissants with the extra chocolate on it. I mean, like, at least Ethan got to see it. And, you know, for once in his life, he wasn't stupid.
Yeah.
And put the pieces together relatively quickly.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I'm... The PMSing and chocolate croissants sound so good.
I have mini chocolate croissants. You can have one later.
Wait, really?
I do.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Don't cry.
No, I'm okay. I'm not crying. I'm happy.
Thank you for listening to part one of this week's episode of Book Talk for Book Talk. We encourage you to rate and subscribe to our show on your preferred podcast listening platform. Tune in Thursday for part two, where we finish covering this week's chapters.
We would love to hear your thoughts based on today's conversation. You can submit your comments to our form at booktalkforbooktalk.com for a chance to have your feedback discussed during a future mini episode.
If you're enjoying the podcast, please visit our website, booktalkforbooktalk.com, to view our latest merch and learn about supporting the show through Patreon, Ko-Fi, or Venmo.
Bye.